Today on the Voices of Legacy, we're honored to welcome a man of deep faith, of seasoned leadership, unwavering community service, none other than Pastor Elder William L. Lucas Sr. From humble beginnings, high school dropout to becoming an ordained minister, seasoned chaplain, successful community leader, Pastor Lucas' life is a powerful testimony of what can be done by the will and faith of humankind. He is a founder or the founder of Liberty Ministries with long service as a chaplain, and we'll talk about that for Toledo Police Department as well as Lucas County Sheriff's Department previously. Marriage counselor alongside his beloved wife, Lady Elaine Lucas. He also served in the United States Army. Thank you so much for your service, sir. Former employee of General Motors Powertrain, amongst other things. Good morning, afternoon, and whenever you're listening to this. Reverend Lucas, how are you?
I am excellent.
Good, good, good. What do you go by?
William, Will.
Will.
Just call me.
As long as you call me something
exactly.
Nice, hopefully. Tell us more about yourself.
Well, I think if I was to start, first of all, let me thank you for this opportunity. And we're very humbled and glad to be here today.
It's an honor.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
Thank you. I have so many avenues that ends up in the same place. I don't know what street to start on. Coming out of grade school, mm-hmm. I was always good at math, uh-huh. and I was able to get into Macomber. Uh-huh. So I got into Macomber, got over there, and then I just got tired of seeing guys all day. Mm-hmm. So I came out of there and went back to Scott. And then...
Hold on, you left Macomber. I can't leave that alone so that you could be around the ladies.
Yeah.
Did it work?
That worked, but the area of... error with that was uh-huh. now I didn't want to go to school at all.
Oh my goodness.
So I hung outside of school more than running inside of school. Although when I was there my freshman and sophomore year, I was a part of the 100, the marching 100. Mm-hmm. I played percussion and all that kind of stuff. And then I just got so involved in the ideal of having money and prosperity. Mm. So right around the corner before we get to Scott High School, there was an area that we did a lot of throwing dice and stuff. So I started doing that. And then I said, this is not going to work out for me very well. So I thought, I need to do something that's going to, I don't know how and why. Mm-hmm. I was thinking futuristically. But I said, I need to set up something for the future. Hmm. So I went and joined the Army Reserve 6 years there. At least I have something. Mm-hmm. I knew I was a dropout, so at least I have some reserve
background. Oh, so you dropped out from Scott?
Completely dropped out.
Wow.
Went to the reserves, came back home. And then my avenues start changing because my life started changing. Mm-hmm. And then I started looking at, well, what I really want to do. Mm-hmm. The tune of prosperity in my mindset was just the problem with young people today. Mm-hmm. They think it's always a shortcut. Yeah. There are no shortcuts, mm-hmm. believe me.
Oh, yeah.
So I looked at what can I do and what avenues are most eventful and mm-hmm. progressive. Mm-hmm. So my mother had just gotten saved. She left the Baptist, Methodist, and then went into holiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there for a while, and I said, well, my pastor at that time was Bishop William James.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I have one godly man who's prosperous.
The legendary.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I have all these other pimps and players and everything out here that are prosperous.
Mm-hmm.
So I started looking, I think my odds are better going the other direction.
Ah.
So I started going the other direction, and then that finally came to a halt when I started realizing that I'm not going to be able to maintain this and do this.
Hmm.
So I wasn't working. I went through, I think it was Chrysler had a training program for working, helping you with your resume and all that kind of stuff. So I finished that, and then I started looking for a job.
Yeah.
So I reached out to the trust, which was supposed to be. I filled out an application. They wasn't calling anything else. So I purposed, if I want to get a job, I need to be persistent and I need to let them know that I'm serious about it. So every day at 3 o'clock, I would call to the trust, human services, to see if they was hiring and to make sure they knew I was available. I did this every day for about two to three weeks. And then they finally called me. Got on there and started getting more into the church at the time, working at Tula Trust. And then I heard a preacher saying, if you need to want to get better, just pray and ask God for a better job or whatever you want to do. So I thought about that and I said, you know what? I'm gonna take him at what he stated. So I started stating, I have a brand new job. And I was new in faith, so, and one thing about being new in faith, you take risks that you would not after you grow up in it, which is a negative thing, unfortunately. But it seems like when we get more involved in faith in the church and we be there for a while, we start losing the fresh, childlike situation, and then revert back into it got to make sense.
But your positive affirmations, did it pay off?
Definitely. I went even as far as telling my employer, people who I was employed with, I'm getting a new job. They said, well, where are you going? I said, I don't know yet, but I know I'm getting a new job. So there was a, they came down, the personnel came down to me and said, I have to take off a day for whatever reason, and which I didn't understand. But, so that one day that I had off, I went and put in some, I went to put in some applications. I was going down Alexis, which was the first time on that street that's out of town, and I saw Chevrolet at that time. But I was going to, my appointment was down the street from there selling fire hydrant, fire extinguishers. So I stopped at Chevrolet, asked them, were they taking the applications? They said, no. I said, well, can I put in one anyway? They said, sure. So I put in an application, went on down to the other location for this fire extinguisher job. And while I was there, I felt uncomfortable. I said, nah, I don't think this is it. So at the end of the day, went home, went back to work the next day. And I think that was like on a Wednesday. And that Friday, my mother called me. I was at work at Tula Trust. Said, General Motors called. They want you to call them. I said, really? So when I was there, met with them, and they hired me on the spot.
Wow.
I started there, and at this time, still, I did not have a high school diploma.
You didn't even have
anything.
Nothing, wow.
I got hired, and they put me in shipping and receiving clerk. So I was handling both two different departments. One was on one side of General Motors, one was on the other side of General Motors. And then, about 5-6 weeks in, they came to me and said, well, we're gonna go a different direction, so you think you can go back to where you were at? Well, I said, no, I can't go back to where I was at.
Your old job?
My old job.
Oh, my.
And then I thought, I said, now, a week before, I took checks back to the forklift drivers, and at that time, they did not have envelopes. The checks was open, so I could see them. And I looked at the check, I said, wow. These guys are making more than what I am. So I remember that when they were telling me about, can I go back? I said, well, can I just go out in the factory? They said, you want to go out in the factory? I said, yes. I was like, okay, well, we'll get to go to the factory. So from Tula Trust to General Motors in the office, it doubled my salary.
Wow.
From my, the Tula Trust, I mean, from Chevy, in the salary to the floor, which is hourly, it doubled my salary again. So I was like, this is good.
Wow, that's progress. But it's unplanned progress.
Totally unplanned. And it also helps me realize now, don't leave that infantile, that childlike mindset when you do come into the church or whatever. Because the worst thing that can hurt you is becoming too sense-minded. It got to make sense.
Yeah.
No, faith doesn't make sense.
No.
And I remember hearing my pastor say years ago, he said, faith, I don't really like it. Hmm. He said, but I have no choice. I have to live by it.
That's true.
And he told me something then that I never forgot. Hmm. He said, faith is just a well-calculated risk.
Yeah.
I said, wow.
So were you married at this point, or?
When I went to General Motors, no, I was not married.
Oh, okay.
But I was seeing. Well, at that time, we wasn't dating, because Bishop didn't like individuals getting too close together being and have a problem. So we was always go out with groups.
Mm-hmm.
So in actuality, me and my wife really never dated. We was always with groups.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a vacation. I went to North Carolina, came back, and I said, I think I'm moving to North Carolina because it was really nice there. My wife said, no, you can't go there. I said, wait a minute. She wasn't my wife. Mm-hmm. She was just a friend still. So she said, no, you can't go to North Carolina. I said, really?
And she's not your girlfriend, not your wife?
Neither.
Sounds like she was claiming you.
I think she was. So before we realized it, I don't know really how it already all happened, that I start going to church again. I mean, not going to church, but getting involved with her and thinking about marriage. Now that I have a decent job and I can't support someone. But I need to backtrack to one little quick piece before I went back to the church. Because when I was working at the trust, I was not saved. I wasn't thinking about God, but I was doing everything else. And then I finally just got tired. Just tired of just existing. So I went to my brother. He was a wonderful musician before he passed in the city, Bobby Lucas. And I went to him. I said, man, I'm getting back in the church. He said, well, if you go back, don't play with it. And I said, I'm not going to play with it. I'm gonna really put my all in it. So, and the reason I started having that thought is because I was trying to, first of all, get close to another girl that I met who was in the church, but I would see her and we would meet for lunch almost every day.
Now, I hear a theme. You left Matt Cumber to Scott for what?
Female.
And you were at church at first, going out on a regular basis, and you met your wife, and now there's another one.
Right. Before I went back to the church and meet my wife at St. James,
okay,
that's when I start talking to this other girl that got me interested in getting back into church. But she would never let me go to church with her.
Oh.
And she allowed me to take her home a couple of times. But I said, you know, can I pick you up? No. I said, okay. I said, now what kind of stuff is this?
Reverend Lucas, this is getting good. But keep going.
So, and she would always, when she'd get in my car, she'd put on a Christian station, and I would always hear Pinewood Tabernacle. So I wouldn't get anywhere with her. And I gave myself back to the Lord in my office at Tudor Trust. I said, this was on Wednesday. Friday, church happens around the city. So I said, I'm gonna get myself back in the church. I did not want to go back to St. James. I reared up in that because of where my mother was at. But I was too embarrassed.
To go back.
So I said, I can't go back there, so I need to find somewhere else. Let me find this church that I'm hearing on the radio, Pinewood Tabernacle. I could not find that church anywhere. I went the whole existence of Pinewood Street, couldn't find a church. I drove all the city. I said, okay, forget Pinewood. Let me just find a church. Every church I went to, nothing was happening. I mean, lights out, clothes, everything. I did not realize it until I looked up, and I know I didn't drive there, but I was sitting in the front of St. James on the opposite side of the street, right in the front.
Wow.
I said, no, I know I didn't drive there. So I went on in, heard the message, and then he had altar call, and I went up to the altar call, and Bishop James remembered me.
Wow.
Then I was stuck again. I was now I'm at home for real.
Yeah.
So that's when we start. I start maturing in the church, and I started a tape ministry, because at that time I was taping a lot of the services because I knew repetition would be beneficial.
Yeah.
So, and then when I started doing it, people started asking for tapes, and then it became a ministry of mine, tape ministry. And I still have one major problem, which I'll get to shortly. So I got into church, was going out on groups, all that kind of stuff. Went to North Carolina, came back. I was going to move there. My wife, Orlene, at that time said, no, you can't go there. So before we realized it, I said, okay, let's get married.
And she said?
She said, yes.
Oh, all right.
I went, oh, and this gets even better, because when I went, when we went to Bishop and said, we're going to, no, I went to Bishop, and so I gave Elaine a ring, I'm going to get married. He said, go get the ring back. Oh. I said, go get the ring back. He said, no. He said, I'll meet with both of you. So we met with him together, and he told her, I'm having to get the ring back, and I don't want you two seeing each other until I let you know. So we couldn't talk with each other, could do anything in the same church. And I became really good friends with her mother, because her mother was one of the missionaries. I used to go over and talk to her all the time. So even when I was go over her house still, Elaine had to leave the room or had to get out the house, one or the other. So, and Bishop kept us apart and asked him, well, how long? He was getting ready to go to the National Convention, which was November. He said, I'll let you know when. So it kept us in a dilemma for a pretty good, for at least, I think, 6 weeks I don't think it was 90 days. Then he finally told me that I can give her the ring. But I didn't realize that as students in the church, because that's what we all are, students, with their learn, that we should give more understanding and more, be more acceptive of the one who we're getting life from. Because he's responsible for our soul. And I didn't see all that at that time. So when I obeyed him, did what he said to do, then we went further, then we finally did get married. Now, when we got married, I was at the church on like a Wednesday or something in Bible study. And then they asked me to read something. And I stumbled in my reading of this scripture. That's when my wife found out that I couldn't read. And then as we go on in time, the Lord started impressing upon me about ministry. I said, I don't want to be a minister. I don't want to be a minister. At that time, I was laid off, and I had time to help Bishop out going to Cleveland or other areas, so I would drive him. So one day, it was really on me strong about getting involved with ministry. I said, and I told God, I said, God, I can't get into ministry. I got three good reasons. Number one, I'm illiterate. I can't read. Number two, people nowadays are looking for more educated individuals to teach them. I didn't even have a high school diploma. And number three, I don't know if I really want to live quite that straight.
Oh, boy. Well, that's at least it's honest.
I was very honest with him.
And but then, did it work?
It worked, because he started eliminating my excuses.
Those objections,
Yes. I learned how to read by reading the Bible. And then there was a compelling something over me about getting back into school. So I said, okay, let me find where they do a GED preparation. And then somebody said, just go take the test. And they was taking the test at the University of Toledo. I went up there, took the test over a five-day period, because they had different sections dealing with GED. And then I passed well beyond the average. And then at that particular time in our life, I was married. I think my third, our third child was born, and I felt I needed to get into school since I was finally through this thing.
Yeah.
So the president had started a CETA program.
Mm-hmm.
So I got into a CETA program and then got into design engineering because I was in good with math. That worked perfectly for me.
You're talking about the president of the United States.
Yes.
Gotcha. Carter.
Carter at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into that. The design engineering mm-hmm. was doing fantastic, doing good.
Mm-hmm.
And then the program died.
Mm.
So I said, now what am I going to do, God? Then I was at the University of Toledo. So I went to the University of Toledo, got into involved with computer science. And that was like I was born for it.
Wow.
I was really, really good in that area. And then start progressing. And then I got called back to work because this was a period of time that we had a big depression in the United States
mm-hmm.
and nobody was hardly working anywhere. You couldn't even buy a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I got called back to work about like 81, 82. Mm-hmm. Got back in General Motors, mm-hmm. work General Motors for Laker. I just stabbed at education mm-hmm. for years. But something in me, and this was something that was really amazing that I would like every young person to realize. When you miss an important event like graduating, the cap and gown ceremony,
yeah.
and then walk across the stage.
You're talking about from high school?
Yes.
Yeah.
You would think that wouldn't be a desire that you would have. And it always haunted me.
Wow.
I said, I wanted this, but never had that opportunity. So that's why I was still trying to dip and dab in mm-hmm. education. And then it started getting further and further away from coming to a realization for me. And then I just kept continually. And then 40 years later.
So you did get to walk then?
Yes, I did get to walk, but not in high school. When I had my first walk, when I got my bachelor's, and then I had my second walk because I got my master's now.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm looking for the third walk.
On the doctorate?
On my doctorate, yeah. And I'm working on that now.
That's awesome.
And my wife seen me when, well, this was before all the educational piece, but we was working in our basement mm-hmm. on Parkside that we was living there. She said to me, she said, if I never see a miracle, I seen one in you.
Wow.
Because she saw that whole transformation of not being able to read mm-hmm. and then all the different accomplishments that I guess people would say that I have achieved over that period of time. And it just kept evolving.
She stuck with you all the way?
All the way. Never, even when I was not working mm-hmm. and couldn't find it, she never pushed me or made me feel bad, mm-hmm. was always
less
in my corner.
Than a man.
Never anything of that nature. And December of this year, we would be married 48 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations. If I had a applause track, oh, man, that's awesome. That's awesome. So you are definitely a Toledo, and I'm assuming you were born?
Yes, born and raised.
Born and raised. From, let's see, you dropped out of high school. Well,
mm-hmm.
no, you left one school to go to another school for the girls. I'll never
yes.
forget that part. Dropped out,
mm-hmm.
dabbled a little bit in the streets. I'm assuming that's what you're saying when you're talking about
yes,
the tips and whatnot.
Yes.
That didn't work out.
More than a little bit, but I did.
Okay. No, I was trying to be litigious. And then got in a church, left the church,
mm-hmm.
came back to the church,
mm-hmm.
found a wife,
mm-hmm.
had to wait on the wife.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a book. or a made-for-TV movie. Oh,
I
wow.
agree. And my wife been even on me about, said, yeah, I've been through so much,
mm-hmm.
and from her definition, accomplished them, but she always pushed me about, you really need to write a book.
Mm.
So after I did my thesis, I said, maybe it's not too bad of a deal to be thinking about. So
well, I'm concentrating. Well, you do marriage counseling or both?
Yes. Yeah, we've been doing marriage counseling together, and I found that we're more effective having a husband and a wife, because then we can deal from both aspects of the man view and the female view. So we've been doing that almost 40 years now.
Wow. So when did you transition from being up under leadership to being leadership?
Well, I was serving Bishop James. And then initially, when I was laid off, mm-hmm. I was only able to do little things here and there. And then when I got called back to work, And then I really start accepting myself into the ministry as far as accepting the mentality of it. I started working with Bishop. No, God allowed me to work with him. And I asked God many, many, many times.
As an adjutant?
Yes.
And explain the definition of adjutant for our listeners.
Adjutant is an individual who, I would say, do the best way I can say I put it, doing the mediocre things for and serving someone else so they can
some
do
pretty
things,
important things
that's very more important.
Yeah.
They can put their attention on the more important things.
So kind of like an apprentice.
Sure, all the stuff, correct. And their aide or their assistant. And in the process of thinking about working with him, and because I was able to travel with him for 12 years, and if he was still alive, I would probably still doing the same if he would allow me. Because I was really into that.
Yeah.
And I knew the Lord had placed me in that place. And over the period of time, he tried to give me, I think, about 5 or 6 churches to show me he appreciated it. But I did not accept it anymore because I wasn't there for that purpose. I was there because I really felt in my heart
to serve.
That I was there to serve him and be a help for him because I felt that's where God put me. So in so doing, I thought, when he was elevated and was a part of the Church of God in Christ, and he was a jurisdictional bishop here, and then he got onto the general board, which consists of 12 bishops that run the whole organization. He elevated to that position in 2000, or was 1999 or 2000. And then I thought at that point, now he'd be in a position to really make a difference. And I was really happy for him because that elevated me too, because I went through different tiers of that adjutancy to be an episcopal adjutant, working with him directly, apostolic adjutant. So he passed. The Lord let him get that achievement and then took him home. And I said, Lord, what is going on here? I'm thinking we're finally going to make a difference. So I asked my wife, I said, I just need to store away for 3 days. So I said, put me in a hotel, 3 days, let me seek God. What am I supposed to be doing now? So in during the course of that 3 day, the Lord told me, I called you to be a servant to a servant. Now I'm calling you to be a servant to servants. And I knew what he was saying. I didn't agree, but I knew what he was saying. So I started changing my mindset as much as I could. And it was 10 years into pastoring when I really became a pastor at heart in mind.
When you first started, did you feel qualified?
No, by no means. And still have wondering if I'm qualified yet.
Well, you've been doing it for a while now.
Yeah, it's been 22 years now.
Yeah. So, and as we're going through, I guess, your life story, really, how did the Toledo Police Department and Lucas County Sheriff's Department play a role in any of what we talked about, and when did it come about?
Okay. After Bishop was elevated, that's what I call his promotion, and I was at a position in the National Church that very few people be able to achieve, because you only can get that place if you are serving a general board member. So, and then I had to transcend from being in that position. I always wanted to be involved with the security of our national church. So I got involved with that. And then in being involved with that, a lot of their officers, we had police officers, we had FBI people, we had other people who was assisting or being chaplains in their region or their own home. So I said, okay, maybe I'll go home and see if I can get involved with the police department. Now, I already did, through General Motors, I had already experienced being a fireman, because that's one of the things I was there. I was an industrial fireman. And then I elevated from just being an industrial fireman to being a confined space personnel. Because I never looked at myself just being average at anything. I had to excel over in everything I was in to be in that smaller group of people. So when I came back, after a national meeting, I happened to go out to a breakfast at Friendship, and I saw Chief Mike Navarro there. Mm-hmm. So I asked.
When he was chief, a police chief.
When he was a police chief at Portillo Police Department. Mm-hmm. I saw him there. I told him I was interested. Mm-hmm. He took my name and number. And then that very next week, Pat Gladio, which was the liaison, mm-hmm. he was the detective. He was the liaison between the chaplains and the police department mm-hmm. for us. And he gave me a call. Then I started getting some additional training in that arena. And they sent us up to OPATA, which is up in London, Ohio, mm-hmm. where we do a lot of training for the chaplaincy. Mm-hmm. And then that just started maturing, and it's been 25 years now.
Oh, so you're still the chaplain
for Toledo Police Department? I'm still one of the chaplains.
Okay.
Yeah. There's only two of us now, mm-hmm. but we would like to broaden out to have a little bit more involvement, because mm-hmm. the ultimate thing to have is a representation from different denominations or what have you. Mm-hmm. So that can be be helpful for our department. So I'm still involved with them now. I got involved with the sheriff department when Sheriff Thorpe was mm-hmm. in place, and we got along very, very well. So mm-hmm. I was out of working as a deputy sheriff, mm-hmm. out of his office. Mm-hmm. So I only did that during the time that he was there.
So you were one of the chaplains for TPD and the sheriff's department?
Yes.
Wow.
So I have both uniforms.
But you're just with TPD right now.
Correct.
Lord, what about the FBI? And this? No.
Now with some of the other different things that I'm involved in,
yeah.
it's kind of difficult to add more without something else paying a price.
What are
for
some
it?
Of the responsibilities? I mean, I think we have some time.
Yeah.
Of being a chaplain for TPD.
Well, one of the things we do is, in your training, we are somewhat of the liaisons between the community and the police department. Mm. So there is a situation going on where a lot of times a police officer couldn't go to that family or to that crowd who's up in arms about what's going on. Mm. We could bring peace to it because we're dealing with both. We're coming from it from a neutral position versus my job as far as being a police officer or the conditions that a family is going through. Mm-hmm. One good example, years ago, I got a phone call because we're on a 24-hour call and we have our own radios and all that kind of stuff they mm-hmm. give us. They called me out to an incident where a gentleman they found dead in a car overnight. Mm-hmm. Well, the family just found out about this. So the family was there, and that was getting more and more and more. They was growing in the family. And then the police department trying to do what they need to do. So my job at that time was to be a liaison between mm-hmm. the department and the family, so the department could do what they need to do, and the family could be informed and not being a negative to what was going on.
Gotcha.
Because when people are in a situation like that, they are right there. Mm-hmm. All they can think about is they're hurt.
Gotcha. So you're there to de-escalate as best you can without being a patrol officer
Correct.
Or a captain or anything like that.
And I found the best way of doing that is find in that crowd who is the power. Mm-hmm. Then you work through that power, mm-hmm. and they will help you maintain a mm-hmm. good balance of mm-hmm. what's going on.
Or the potential instigator.
Yep.
Potential. Not so nice word to use, but wow. And you've been doing that for 25
years. I started in 2000.
Well, that's a lot. That's a lot. So from being a dropout to being an employee of General Motors to now pursuing a doctorate's degree, and your church that you pastor now has been around for over 20 years?
Yeah, 22 years.
22 years. Yeah. Wow.
And I presently... I run the Swainfield Shopping Center, which I'm the operations manager there. Along with that, the owner has four beauty supply stores, which is Star Beauty Supply. Mm. So I'm the operations manager there too.
Wow, what? You stay busy. Well, I guess that's good because it kind of goes along with your story. There's always something more, something better to pursue. Are you thinking about retiring anytime in the near future, or is that top secret?
Well, I retired from General Motors, and I don't see myself not doing anything. Mm-hmm. So I maybe put a different definition of what a retirement is.
So doing what you want to do.
Exactly.
Not what you have to do.
And that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy doing what I'm doing at Swing for Shopping Center because I'm able to, in this particular case, give back to my community that I grew up in. Mm. Because we're going to do a total restoring of Swingfield.
Yes.
And I'm thankful and gracious, blessed to be a part of that transformation.
Yeah, I went to a meeting, we talked about this previously, in regards to the funding of that. And it seems like everything was good to go. They were talking really good. It was clear they're going to release these funds.
Correct.
And like 2 or 3 years later...
Yes. Anytime you deal with the government in the city.
What's happened?
We're talking about...
As much as you can...
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Anytime I found out, when you're dealing with governmental funds, at least anticipated coming in, and then when you're dealing with the city of Toledo, things don't happen overnight.
That's true. It's called bureaucracy, but hopefully things will transition into something positive. A lot of people don't understand the historical nature of that corner.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be really nice to see that area revitalize, multi-use, kind of like what they're doing on Central and they're doing out at Westgate and such.
It's going to happen, and I will say maybe by the time this broadcast, and probably about 3 weeks from now, we should start seeing some activity out there.
Yeah.
And even, which a lot of people did not know, and neither did I, Babe Ruth hit a home run from there.
Oh, wow.
You know, so I have a picture of the stadium in my office, and I've been hearing a different historical facts about it since I got involved with it.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we've come, to the end of this until you get the book out. Might have you back for that, this particular podcast. But the question is, final question, what do you think your legacy is by the perception of those that know you and such, and what would you like for it to be?
Very good question, because I asked myself one day, if I was to die, what would people say? And
he was a busy man.
You know, and this was before I started a lot of this working. And I got involved. I was working with a young lady, Beatrice and Daniels, and she have a program called Journey Through Healing. Mm. So I was involved with her with some things, and we were teaching. Me and her became contractors with the prison system. So we would go in and teach the people there. Mm. I didn't want to give the incorrect terminology of them.
Yeah.
Give the people there a father mentality or what you should do as far as you're getting out, because we need to help them to journey back into society.
Yes.
And while I was there, I thought about that, and that pushed me into volunteer at that time for the CASA program. Mm. So I got involved with CASA, and then I start realizing that I can make a difference in the lives of those that was coming up. Mm. And that will be your legacy.
Mm. It made a difference.
The impartation that you can give to lies beyond you. Mm. So when you are gone, your work is still happening because you made a deposit.
Yeah.
So I want to make a deposit and to change the lives of others.
Awesome. Wow. Well, that was a lot. and we actually didn't cover everything, the before and after we say I do program for couples and such. I thank you for coming and sharing your life with us and our listeners. I think it would be inspirational to some and motivational to others and revelation
to others.
that might not know, but awesome. Lineage, and it sounds like your son is just taking and going on with the legacy moving forward. We hope to have him here too.
Definitely.
But again, thank you so much for coming on the Voices of Legacy.
Well, I definitely appreciate the opportunity. one day we have more time, I can cover some of the other avenues.
Yes,
that
yes,
we talked yes. about. But listen, the biggest thing I would like to, if I could leave anything with the listeners, always, the first thing we need to do in life, and I shared this with my membership, find out what your purpose of existence is. See, every one of us are here for a different purpose. And until we find that out, we're just walking in the dark and won't achieve what we're supposed to achieve because we don't know what that is. So we need to all see God, be whether you're in church or not, look to your higher power, whatever it is, and find out why you are breathing this air, why you are existing, because there is a purpose.
Oh, yes.
And once you find that purpose, now you'll be directed towards everything you're supposed to do and make a difference in everyone's life, including yourself.
Awesome. Thank you for listening to the Voices of Legacy. This is your friend, Pastor Carl Mitchell III, your host of this program. We want you to go to wgte.org/legacy to like, share, subscribe, and hear all of our past podcasts and our future podcasts. Be a friend and join with us in the Voices of Legacy, where you're writing your own legacy every day that you live. Have a blessed day.
WGTE, Voices Around Us.